Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the seventh session on our class on successive themes in the Buddha Dhamma. So we have so far discussed how many paramitas? I guess four paramitas. For today, the fifth one, Viriya. That is Viriya. Viriya, Viriya. So, and it comes from the Sanskrit word Viriya, Viriya. So, I'm looking for a whiteboard marker. I said that just for recording purpose. So it's okay. I can spell that out. It comes from Viriya. Are
you looking for a whiteboard?
Yes. Yeah. Everything's gone from here. Probably they put everything somewhere. So, yes. Viriya, Viriya is Sanskrit, and Viriya is Viriya, that is Pali. Okay, oh, thank you. So, and this is the fifth paramita. We'll continue. That's okay. I will spell each word. So, as you say, it comes from Sanskrit in general. So, Viriya literally means and Viriya. Viriya is Sanskrit. Viriya is Sanskrit. Viriya is Pali. Viriya literally means state of a strong man. State of a strong man or strong person. Should examine that, yeah. We'll examine that. Should be, there should be, because most English words have has Indian root. English being an Indo-European language, there should be a lot of words that come from Sanskrit. I will look into that. Thank you. That's very mind me that. So Viriya or Viriya literally means the state of a strong person. Now that means that is the state that we are supposed to maintain all throughout. That is when it becomes a paramita. And it is one of the hardest paramitas because we easily get enervated. We easily get discouraged by things that happen to us, by things that happen in our life. As a bodhisattva, it should be our constant, we should be constantly aware of our course of action. So paramita is, in that sense, Viriya is a feeder paramita, meaning Viriya feeds every other paramita. So we need Viriya in order for us to practice all the other paramitas. So this is more like an underline. So this provides us the grounding, the necessary grounding for to continue our practice. That is why Viriya is very difficult to practice. So that is the meaning. Again, Viriya literally means state of a strong person. It literally means it has the meaning of vigor, energy, effort, and or exertion. Now, Virya is directly connected with enlightenment. Sambodhi. We discussed that word Sambodhi, I guess. S-A-M-B-O-D-H-I. Sambodhi and Bodhi. I think it's worth getting on the board again. Sambodhi and Sambodhi, which means the same. Bodhi and Sambodhi. Bodhi is enlightenment. Sambodhi also means enlightenment. But Sambodhi, you use the term Sambodhi to put more emphasis on the fact that enlightenment has to be achieved all by yourself. Bodhi is enlightenment in general. Sambodhi is used to stress that it has to be achieved all by yourself. The Sambodhi. Hence, Samma Sambuddha. So, Buddha and Sambuddha. So when you say the Buddha, you call him Siddhartha Gautama Buddha or the Samma Sambuddha, or even Samma Sambuddha again. All these three words mean the same thing. Now, Sambodhi, Virya, Paramita, is directly connected to Sambodhi or enlightenment. Now, in different sutras, you come across a list of seven. Maybe you are familiar with this word, Sambojjhanga and or Bojjhanga. Sambojjhanga or Bojjhanga. Now, this word is made of two words, Bodhi Anga. Again, this is also a Pali class, Pali terminology class. Now, Bodhi is enlightenment. Anga is constituent, a part of the path to enlightenment. That's a constituent. Anga means constituent, part, component. So that's what Anga means. So Bodhi Anga. Bojjhanga is what is part of the grounds of awakening. So there are seven such Bojjhanga. There are famous sutras like in Southeast Asia, especially Buddhist people chant. They do what is called medichant, medical chanting, meaning there's a collection of sutras in the book of in the Great Book of Protections. It's called Bojjhanga Sutras. Kassapa Mahakassapa Thera Bojjhanga, Mahamoggallana Thera Bojjhanga, Mahachunda Thera Bojjhanga. And Bojjhanga means Bodhi Anga. When Venerable Kassapa, Venerable Moggallana, and Buddha, when they fell ill, they were approached by another monk. And they reminded Venerable Kassapa on the advice of Buddha. Venerable Ananda approached Venerable, went to see Venerable Moggallana and Kassapa on different occasions when they were ill, when the latter was ill, and they were reminded how they practice, how they were striving for their enlightenment, and how they made it, how they achieved their enlightenment. It is like, it is the spiritual motivation. The seven factors, there are seven constituents of enlightenment, seven factors of enlightenment. I will go through them just for recording purpose. Sati, that is, by the way, we hardly come across this translation of sati, self-possession as one word. Self-possession is the translation by Dr. Rhys Davids. Self-possession. Sati is mindfulness. Dhamma Vichaya, investigation of the doctrine, in terms of the how to in terms of the how to say tilakkhana, the three signs of existence. We are not going to talk about them today. I'm just going through the list for recording purpose, just to say that there are seven. So and third one, virya, energy that we are going to talk, we are discussing today. Then piti, joy, passaddi, tranquility of the mind, samadhi, concentration or stillness, upekkha, equanimity. Now these are the, elsewhere you come across a whole list of 37 factors of enlightenment. 37. If you are interested, there's one book for distribution at the lobby by Wings to Awakening by Tanisaro Bhikkhu. Wings to Awakening. There are 37 wings to awakening. If we use Venerable Tanisaro's word, these are the seven most important wings to awakening. Wings to enlighten. I love that translation and that term. Wings to awaken. You fly away, fly into enlightenment. So if we use the word, if we use wings in place of the academic term constituent or the factor, that would make more sense. So so the virya is one of the most important, the top seven wings to awakening, top seven constituents of enlightenment. Now even though there are 37 close to enlightenment, you essentially practice these seven out of the 37 factors of enlightenment. So virya is necessary for your enlightenment. So that is why it is considered one of the most important and probably the one of the hardest paramitas. Because you need to maintain virya all the time, because even the moment we get discouraged, even the most unimportant things happen, then we get discouraged by that. So virya is an innate tendency. The innate is part of the innate potential, virya. So elsewhere, and later on we will touch on another, when it comes to right effort, which is part of the Noble Eightfold Path, there we don't use the word virya. We use a different word, vayama. And they come from two different roots, virya and vayama. Both meaning effort, come from two different roots. And there's a reason why, and we will discuss that later on. So, again, so virya literally means state of a strong person. Because we need that tendency, that innate ability all throughout. Otherwise, we would easily give up. We would easily get discouraged by our own practice. When you don't see results of your spiritual practice. So sometimes people, quite naturally, we want to achieve some spiritual advancement within a short period of time since we started. But when we don't see the results, we get discouraged. Venerable Chakkupala is the best example for virya. This is Venerable Chakkupala, CAKKHUPALA. Chakkupala, CAKKHUPALA, Chakkupala. Now, actually his name, it was a nickname. South Asian literature is full of nicknames. There's a whole nickname culture in Southeast Asia. Even Buddha's, some monks were known as, not necessarily meant to mention the Pali words. Instead of calling a certain monk by his name and say, the monk who lives by the river, the monk who lives on top of a mountain, the monk who always sits in the shade of a tree. That's how they went on. So nobody has done extensive research in nickname culture, because I recently encouraged some Western students. I can help them do a research. It's worth a doctoral research. Do some research on nickname culture. Even it's universal here in too, in anywhere. So, and a nickname culture. So that's why when they go to the negative or the disastrous aspect of nickname culture, and you call them name calling, right? So you call names. So so and then Chakkupala, he became a monk very young, and he wanted to achieve enlightenment. He kept trying so hard, he strived so hard that he stopped taking a nap, taking a sleep. He never slept for 16 years. 16 years he didn't sleep. So as a result, the moment he became an arahat, fully enlightened, he became blinded. He lost his eyesight permanently. So Chakku means eye, Pala means one who controls. One who controls his eyes, that's the literal meaning. Meaning, he never let his eyes to close. He never closed his eyes. He had perfect control over his eyes. That's what meaning, he didn't sleep. So the underlying meaning, idiomatically, Chakkupala means one who doesn't sleep. So now, the moment he became enlightened, he made what is called a statement of enlightenment. You know, Theragathas and Therigathas in this is part of the Buddhist Pali Buddhist canon. Theragathas and Therigathas are the songs of enlightenment. That's the literal translation. The statements of enlightenment by monks and nuns. And Chakkupala made his statement saying that, now I can see. That's what he said. Now I can see. Meaning, for the last 16 years, or even before when he was born, as long as he could remember himself, he didn't see. He had perfect vision in his naked eyes, but he said in his statement of awakening, Bodhi, Sambodhi, I didn't see, now I see. He was referring to his eye of wisdom. So that is, he's Venerable Chakkupala. He's used the best example. He's used as an, he's considered an embodiment of Virya. How dedicated he was. His incredible forbearance. So that is the story of Chakkupala. Yes.
Did he go blind due to the lack of sleep?
Sleep, yeah. Lack of sleep, yeah. He went blind because of his lack of sleep. According to Sutra, he never wanted sleep. But when I was told that story, I didn't believe that. So later on, I came to Krishna. There are some people. I met one man in Malaysia. A good meditator. I also met someone from what's called Darjeeling, India. He hadn't slept for years, and except that he would just close his eyes for a few seconds and open. That would be a nap. And instantaneously, the moment he closes his eyes, he would take a deep breath and then he would open his eyes. And that's how he would supercharge his. And when we met him like a few years ago in Malaysia, we called him the fast charger. Because we have the fast charger, you know, the charger head, supercharger. He's well known as the Mr. Fast Charger. So that's what his motivation was. That's exactly. That's not middle path, and it wouldn't be. So the Buddha wouldn't recommend it. It's not recommended in Buddhist spirituality. However, Chakkupala is a very special case. It would be considered. It can be very easily considered. Nobody. We are not supposed to encourage ourselves to do the same, because that is, as you say, it's not middle path. It's way outside of middle path. So that is one of the reasons why Buddha gave, Siddhartha gave up on his 6 years of self-mortification and started adopting a moderate lifestyle, Majjhima Patipada, middle path. So that's the Virya. And virya is twofold. That is arambha, A-R-A-M-B-H-A, arambha, and U uttana, U T T, the diacritical mark, dot underneath T T, H-A-N-A, uttana, arambha, virya, uttana, virya. Arambha is startup. You need, when you maybe early morning or when you sit in meditation, when you start, forget about the spiritual practice. Even in your conventional life, in your worldly life, you need to start a course of action when you embark upon a certain endeavors, whatever it is, spiritual or worldly. You need to do that wholeheartedly, and you have to put all your energy into it. So otherwise, when the start is weak, and you wouldn't be able to see the results. So the arambha is the startup virya, startup energy, and you motivate yourself to not to stop until you reach your goal, until you achieve your target. That is arambha. And the uttana, so as we continue, you may feel like giving up. You may have second thoughts that you are not going to make it. It is at that point you need to re-energize yourself, reinforce yourself. So the uttana is the reinforcement energy, reinforcement virya. You reinforce yourself so that you can continue again. You can apply, and this is why nowadays in the West and in the East, especially this arambha and uttana virya are highly considered as a business part of the business principles in the business world. People use it, and people use the cause and effect, the Buddha's idea of cause and effect as part of the business training nowadays. Cause and effect, and so the arambha and uttana as startup and reinforcement are built into what is called cause and effect. When you lack motivation, that wouldn't bring you the results as expected. Whereas when you start with a lot of energy, putting all your energy into it, getting motivated by the result that you are going to achieve one day, and never letting yourself fall, maintaining your energy and motivation. In order to maintain your motivation, you use the reinforcement energy. Now, this is interestingly in Buddhist scriptures. Especially in Buddhist literature, arambha virya and uttana virya, the startup energy and reinforcement energy are used to discourage people who would easily put the blame on karma and horoscope. People easily put the blame on karma and horoscope. When you start doing some, when you don't see the results, and you put the blame of, maybe it's my karma, I can't do anything, I can't achieve this. People give up on that. People do that a lot. I come a lot of, most of the time in Sri Lanka. Did I mention in one of our sessions when I, this time in Sri Lanka, I address a group of business people. In fact, later on, they were lined up to personally talk to the monk. Each was given 10 minutes for personal chat, for interpersonal. There are about maybe 40 people, around 17, 18 people personally told me that they had almost given up. All of them had already put the blame on karma. Some had put the blame on the horoscope. Then I told them, karma, and this is just another area of this we can talk about here today. Now, nowhere in the Bodhisattva path, nowhere in the literature on the Bodhisattva path, do you come across a statement or a mention that Bodhisattvas talk about karma? They never. Bodhisattvas never talk about karma, because otherwise they would get easily discouraged by karma. Karma is a reality, but when it comes to practice, they never talk about karma. Instead, virya, and virya is very important as a, how to say, this is called virya always, we are encouraged to practice virya. It is virya that helps us to plant new karma in our head, virya, because karma is not fate, not destiny, as we talked in previous talks. Karma is very different than fate. Fate is taught basically in theistic religions, because it has a connection with God or the divine, with the cosmos. Whereas in Buddhism, we only believe in karma. Karma, you can create new karma on daily basis. You can plant new karma with virya, so that you wouldn't be able to delete or to weaken the already existing karma. Once made, karma would be part of your subconscious mind, your subliminal mind. Karma will be there, so that you have to face your karma. But by planting new karma, by using virya, you can push certain karma to the sides. And you come across this word ahosi in the categorization of karma. You come across this word ahosi kamma. Kamma is ahosi, ahosi. Ahosi means defunct karma. So you can push with virya, you can plan new karmas, so that when you continue your samsara, let's say in a certain life form, you become enlightened. Then upon enlightenment, there will be no more rebirth for you. Then what happens is all the remaining karmas become defunct, because there's no person to go through or face them. That's called ahosi karma. So virya is the number one reason, the number one practice. We are always encouraged to use virya to plant new karma. So that is why bodhisattvas dedicate a lot of time to practicing virya paramita, because it's a feeder paramita. It feeds every other paramita. For example, let's say a bodhisattva is, remember the last time we talked about bodhisattva Maitri and bodhisattva Gautama. They met in one life. They were in one of their previous lives. They were friends and they were traveling. They were cutting through the jungles and traveling somewhere. They came back. They encountered hungry tigers. And so she was almost, she was starving and unable to feed her cubs. And that is when both thought to themselves, I should, whether to sacrifice their lives to the tigers. And that is the moment before Maitreya had thought about it, Gautama already he jumped onto the tiger. And so that when Maitreya opened his eyes, his friend was gone. The tigers was already feeding on, was eating, already eating the Gautama's body. So that was that moment he used that virya. He used virya instantaneously. Probably Bodhisattva Maitri was maybe a few seconds late. So when we in decision making, also in spiritual life, in day-to-day life also, virya is one of the things that we, since I moved to the West, Western people, if there's one thing, one particular paramita that they would love to practice, dedicate more time to, it is virya. So
Would it be correctly transmitted as, translated as determination?
determination also, yeah. Yeah, determination, yeah. So yeah, there are many translations. Some people call it determination too. Actually, in layman's language, it makes more sense when you call it determination. You are determined to. So that's video. So Aramban Uttana. Now let's look at the next one. Now, as I said, right effort, that is part of the Noble Eightfold Path, is called Vayama in Pali, Sammavayama. So it has no connection with etymological, it is not connected to virya. So why is then, while virya is mentioned in throughout the Pali canon, when it's not, the term is not used in the Noble Eightfold Path. Instead of virya, it is called vayama. Now there's a reason why it's said. Now vayama is not, it is not a tendency, it is not an innate ability. Virya is an innate ability, that's a built-in ability. Vayama is an action. It is an action. Vayama is what we do, that is the procedure, that is the process, that is what we do, vayama. Now, so that is why vayama has no connection with the root of virya. Still, vayama means effort. Now, in the description of sammavayama, right effort, you come across, you learn four types of vayamas, four types of effort. First one is, so you make effort to create, to generate wholesome thoughts that has never arisen in your mind before. So that is the wholesome. And kusala, we use the word kusala. Again, it's not punya, it's kusala. Probably we can dedicate the rest of the time on kusala and punya as well for today, because this is part of the virya paramita. Now, so using the word kusala, Buddha talks about four types of vayama, four types of vayama, four types of effort. The first one is to make effort to generate kusala that you had never had in your mind before. The second one is, so you enhance the kusalas that have already arisen in your mind, that you have already generated in your heart. Enhance. The first one is generating kusala anew, kind of kusala that you had never had practiced before. And later we will discuss the word that describe the word kusala. For now, we will just use the word the kusala itself. The second one is to enhance the kusala that you have already, we are already practicing. The third one is not to generate akusala, AKUSA, that's the opposite of kusala. Not to generate, not to let, prevent. Prevent the arising of akusala that has never arisen before in your mind. And the fourth one is to remove the akusala that has or that have already arisen in your mind. So the first two are about cultivation. So the last two are about the prevention. Development or cultivation and prevention. The first two are about the cultivation or progress or development. That there are kusalas that have already arisen in your mind, and then you are, so that you enhance them. And if there are kusalas that have not yet arisen in your mind, and then you generate them. Actually, the second one should be the first one on the list. You generate new kusalas, you enhance all the existing kusalas, you remove the already existing akusalas, and you prevent the akusala that have never no that have not yet arisen in your mind. This is the four efforts. So that is when vayama is used in an ethical sense, whereas virya is in a psychological sense. Virya is a root, it is a root tendency in Buddhist language. It's a root tendency. It is an innate built-in tendency, built part of our potential, virya. And you use virya for the action. That is called vayama. That is why you don't use the virya as part of the Noble Eightfold Path, but vayama. Vayamati, it comes vayamati, to try. So in order to try, you must have the energy first. So it's like Sri Buddha says that in order to practice, in order to develop, cultivate wisdom, panya, you need to have the basic knowledge. Without basic knowledge, how could you? First, you need to be. You have to be. You must have sanity first. You have to be sane to become wiser. When you are insane, you wouldn't even be able to have common sense. And you use the sanity and insanity, especially in legal philosophy. Right? But judges use that, sanity and insanity too. So that is the connection between vayama and virya. Any questions about this?
Because also having a positive outlook, optimistic outlook.
It has to be optimistic all the time. Yes, all the time, optimistic. First, we start with optimism. In one of the definitions of the Buddha Dhamma is, about our overall outlook is that our outlook. We are not supposed to have a pessimistic outlook on life. It has to be optimistic for the time being, and if you only remain optimistic without becoming realistic, when you there's a higher probability that when you fall, you wouldn't be able to stand up. So Buddha encourages optimism first. Then we transform optimism into realism. But optimism is the starting at the starting point. We need optimism, positive thinking. Then positive thinking helps us to become, for example, let's say, it's my body, I must take care of my body. You always think about you as you age, you have positive feelings towards your body. But over time, so when you get sick and you become, when you get ill, and when you feel like you can't support yourself anymore, and that is the time you need to add a little bit of more onto your positive thinking. That is realistic thinking then. Because otherwise, positive thinking is limited. Beyond a certain point, it can't help you. So that we need, thank you, Amal Bingi, that's excellent, yeah. Then we need realistic outlook. And so positive, it is the positive thing. We can't be realistic all at once. We need to start with optimism, optimistic of, then we become realistic. So that is when it says that this general definition of the Buddha's teaching. Buddha Dhamma is, or scholars used to call it Buddhism. Buddhism is neither pessimistic nor optimistic, but realistic. However, be optimistic all the time. So that you should be able to, when you are grounded in optimism, you can very easily work on your failures by becoming realistic. Thank you. That's a great point. Next thing is kusala and akusala. Now, in the future, I wonder whether we'll have a time to talk about kusala and akusala in one of. Let's fit this into this today itself, because this is part of kusala. And now, there's a big difference between the kusala lit. The general translation of kusala is wholesome, but in fact, kusala literally means skill. Kusala is skill. Kusala means skill. Then akusala is the opposite of skill. Skillful, you are skilled, you are unskilled. So kusala and akusala. Now there has been a lot of debates over the Buddhist history whether kusala and punya, the other word, punya. Kusala and punya. In popular Buddhism, people use kusala and punya interchangeably to mean the same thing, kusala and punya. But so ping comes from punya. So the kusala, but there's a big difference. Now, I won't get this on the board because that phrase is too long. I would just spell that out. And Buddha says that anumattena pi punyena attho maihang navijjati. Even an iota or modicum, iota of punya is no use to me. It is, I have nothing to do with punya. That's what Buddha means by that. Tathagata, the Buddha, has nothing to do with punya. He doesn't need punya. And again, he says elsewhere, Tathagata bhikkhave kusala samannagato. Buddha is endowed with kusala. It is the kusala that Buddha needs. Buddha doesn't need punya. He does need kusala. It is kusala that he became an enlightened person, not with punya, but with kusala. The difference here is kusala means skill, punya means merit. Now, but again, and you, but when it comes to kusala kamma, again the term is very confusing. Kusala kamma and akusala kamma, wholesome action and unwholesome action. Now, if or when punya and kusala are used to mean the same thing in terms of karma, because that's kamma. Kusala kamma. Kamma means action, actually. So you do something to become more skillful. That is what kusala kamma means. So merit is good karma. Now, elsewhere, Buddha says that the karma keeps you in the samsara. In other words, karma is a building block to nirvana, to your nirvana. Karma prevents you in samsara. Karma keeps you in the samsara, and so it becomes so the. And when karma means good and bad, now you practice charity. Let's say you feed someone, dana. You practice dana. Now, from dana, you accrue punya, merits. But again, Buddha said it is karma, whether good or bad, keeps you in samsara. Because it motivates you, punya encourages you to remain in the samsara. If punya keeps you in samsara, if it blocks you, if it discourages you for nirvana, then what is the meaning of dana then? Right? That is the question that people ask. Now, after practicing dana, you know, it is dana, punya. Punya is achieved. Punya is made for a worldly purpose, like for a birthday, wedding anniversary, marriage, a party, and there are different worldly reasons for punya. Now, but it is the same action of dana that you turn into kusala. Now, it is the same action that you transform into kusala from punya. Now, let's say, to celebrate your birthday, you threw a party. and everyone enjoyed your food, and everyone was happy, and you were giggling, and you went, it was really entertaining. You entertained your friends. And they, when they were gone, and then you are tired too, before going to bed, you this is what you think. I did that for joy, for happiness, to make others happy. And everyone was happy. So where am I? But again, this is something worldly. And I was able to spend my own money on this. So that I was able to reduce my attachment to the money that I made with a lot of difficulties. I was able to let go of my money. And that was my skill. That is the kusala. And based on that kusala, I should be able to let go of many more things in the coming birth, in the afterlife. So that is when it becomes a paramita. But most people wouldn't do that. Instead, they would start blaming and putting blame. They would do the calculation. It's okay to do the budget. I mean, to go for the budget and how much sometimes you have to borrow money and do that. Still, you need to do that. That's conventional thing. Because Buddha discourages you to do, he encourages you to perform charity or do good things within your means. Within your means only. But some people go extra miles and they try to do things by borrowing money and they put themselves in trouble. When Buddha wouldn't approve that.
Common thing in Sri Lanka.
Very common in Sri Lanka.
Recently, I had a loan to a friend. Uh-huh.
Exactly, they do that too, yeah. Mm-hmm. They ask me too, this time a lot of people do that. Sometimes they borrow a lot of money. Then you loan money to others. Yeah, they do that a lot. And then they suffer. In the name of Punya Kamma, Pinkama in Sinhalese, Punya Kamma, you borrow money. You ask people for money, and then at the same time, what happens is when they are unable to pay back, they come up with a bunch of excuses and they lies. They have to lie then. So after that good action, dana, then they are compelled to lie. And they say, okay, I will return the money tomorrow, maybe the next week, next month, next year. You may or may not get the money back. At the same time, they continue to do akusala then. Not punya, then papa then. This one, great. That's good, yeah. Most people don't do that. Instead, they lie. So then, they borrow money for a punya, come punya, and they end up making more papa. Papa is sin. So yeah, that's very practical. That's when Buddha says that do things within your means. And kusala then, skill. Now, paramitas are kusalas. They are kusalas. They are skills, not punya. That's when Buddha never talks about, he says he has nothing, he was done with samsara. And his course, he used his remaining lifetime to help the world. And there's no purpose for him to make punya anymore. Because he was no attachment. Because we do punya due to attachments. But that's when Buddha asked us to go extra miles and to a better, further extent. And transform your punya into kusala. Now, you have to let go of what you have always spent. If you just think that, okay, so-and-so didn't smile. I invited him for the party. He didn't say a word. He didn't even say hi. He just ate my food and left. And so-and-so didn't, and he only gave me, everyone else gave me $50. And he only gave me $20. So these things happen when you do the, and so I can't. So I spent maybe £3,000 and I only got £65. Oh my. And so that's when people, at that point, people made a lot of papa then. Whereas when it comes to kusala, you let go of what you have spent over something. Then you let go. And then you motivate yourself to let go of more. And this virya is connected with nekkhamma as well. Nekkhamma, last week we talked about nekkhamma, right? What's the nekkhamma? Renunciation. Paramita of renunciation, nekkhamma. So that's That the kusala and punya. So any other questions before we continue?
So kusala could be doing something without expecting anything in return.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, kusala is to give something without expect anything in return, yes. But there are no expectation. Not even a thank you.
Altruistic.
There's something funny that happened to me. When I was a teenage monk, when I helped some people, they were always expect the people to thank me. Sometimes I would be very sad and my guru, my teacher would ask, what happened to you? The whole day you were tired and helping others, and I would say, nobody thanked me. I complain. And that's when, so then you are making papadin out of, what is papadin? I didn't mean papa. Why not you, now you complain against people. Meaning you are already negative. Probably you are having patika sanya or sense of resistance. That is the most subtle form of anger that we discuss. So you are angry now. So that is patika sanya, sense of resistance is very bad. It is a slow killer. It takes away, it kills your energy. Then what should I do? Don't even expect a thank you from them. Then I started doing that. When people thank me, in Sri Lankan culture is non-verbal. When you thank a Sri Lankan, they never say thank you. When you offer them something, they would not, they would appreciate, nod their head or something. They use body language to thank. But nowadays in schools and people, they are well trained to verbally thank people. Otherwise, some people get confused, why I gave him something, but they didn't thank me. So I wouldn't even, when people thank me, I wouldn't say you are welcome. Then some people later had complained, this is very funny, I like that training. They had complained to the head monk about me, against me, and saying that now your student is very proud of himself, we thank him, but he wouldn't even say, well, you are welcome. Then I approached my teacher and said, sir, I was thankful in my heart, but I didn't say that. Because I wanted to counter my own ego, my own egoistic expectation that people must thank me. But now then he taught me the middle path again. No, you have to practice the middle path. Sir, then what is the middle path? Okay, you don't expect thanks in your heart, but thank them verbally. So that is the middle part kind of approach that he told. And it worked. So for example, when people say, thank you, Bhante, for your teaching, and I think you are most welcome, then I delete that. I don't bring that, I don't carry that forward, so and for me, thank, I'm good, Then otherwise, then I would be in trouble, so I would lose my balance, upekkha. Then I would become very egoistic. And probably in my subconscious mind, then I would expect others to thank me, even though not on the conscious mind. It's very tricky then. So that is, and there you also need virya, acceptance and rejection. That is, so this is all about this, the four types of vayama. Also, so there are four, development and prevention. And it also, this the four types of vayama directly is also incorporated into the, how to say, the sasana or the teaching of all Buddhas. Your family sabba papa sakaranang, not to do evil, kusala upasampada, to practice kusala, sachitta pariyodapanang, to purify your mind. Etam Buddhana Sasanam. This is the advice of all the Buddhas. Actually, Sasana means dispensation, not really advice. Sasana, dispensation. Within Sasana, Sasana means in the community, in the assembly of the Buddha, we are supposed only to do cleansing our minds and cultivating, removing akusalas and cultivating kusalas. That's all. Kusalas. Sabba papas, akarana. Akarana means not doing. So another thing is, in that verse,
when it comes to not doing part, it doesn't say akusala. Sabba, not sabba akusala sakarana, but sabba papa sakarana. Whereas when it comes to the cultivation or the development, it is the kusala, not punya. That's the reason for that too. Yes.
Is there actually a sutra, collection of sutras that go into Vinaya?
It's all over. Yeah, but not specific. There are some little, small sutras in the Kuddaka Nikaya, Vidya Sutta. Small, maybe 3 lines, maybe 5-6 lines. And also some in the Devata Sanyutta. In response to certain questions asked by Devas, divine beings, and Buddha will simply explain Virya. And in the Kuddaka Nikaya, in kindred sayings, there are different mentions of Virya in different places, Virya. Everywhere it says Virya, in Buddha's, when Buddha explains something else, and he would say, use your Virya for this and that. And you look Virya. And he would always refer to Virya. Now that is the one thing that Buddha would always refer to when it comes to practice. Because without Virya, we can't achieve anything. So, and that is when Virya is like a feeder paramita. It feeds all the other paramitas, and it motivates you. Virya motivates you for other paramitas, in decision making, in swift action. In making a decision whether when to do that, and you need Virya. Because Virya is also used in business studies, in risk management, because you need Virya to judge, calculate your risks, and to calculate the profit that you would make. So for everything, it's based on Virya. And Virya is also, some people translate Virya as grit. Grit. A couple of years ago, I listened to a TED talk by someone on grit. And I like that word. When I teach children, I use the word grit, power of grit. Grit for anything. And elsewhere I came across how elephant training in Africa, how he uses energy, Virya. There was this rude elephant now running to him, and he simply energized himself, just stood himself just in front of the elephant. The elephant got shocked, and he turned back and ran away. And he called it grit. So grit is also part of your self-confidence. Mm-hmm. It's an innate quality, innate ability.
Right. So mm-hmm. Does that mean, Vayam is a form of the same work effort, but that you can cultivate?
You can cultivate by using Virya.
Right.
Virya is like a drive on your computer. So you can run the software without the drive, like CD drive. Back in the day.
Someone is so low of confidence that he doesn't have much.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So how does he get out of that? He has to go back to Vayama.
Yeah, he had to think the Vayama. Yes, he had to, and always, because there should be something, a course of action to apply your Virya into. So it's always, we always start with what you have been doing already. And based on that, you measure the level of Virya that you have already used, or how much you need. So always the point of reference is action. So, and Virya helps you for action, and then use action refer back to your Virya. So always action. You can perform the implement your action successfully. You cannot implement your course of action successfully when you don't use Virya enough. It's back and forth. It's back and forth all the time. For example, let's say a student, a smart student, Last night, one student talked to me like for 3 hours, a 15-year-old student, 3 hours from 10 to 1 o'clock. That's the time I gave for young, because they don't sleep. And he has insomnia, a lot of problems. And actually, in fact, I never knew the name. And he had some near suicidal feelings too. Now I helped him this morning too. Now he's okay. Because he got me promise that I would never disclose to his parents, because I know he's safe now. He's safe. Otherwise, I would have referred them to parents now. No need to do that. So now what he lacked, he's brilliant. His IQ is very high. Now he thinks that he is not happy with the assignments that he make, because he only got 97 marks. And he couldn't, only 97, he said only 97, I not 100. Then I talked about him, because you got a distinction pass. Then I asked him to, the tricky thing is, does your teacher give you a letter grade or number grade? Well, it's a number grade. Okay. Number grade means then A, distinction. And nobody would ask you, and people would see that you got 100. 97 means, because that is when they psychologically, and this is in measurements, so the GPA measurements, and all that grade point average measurements, and we always test, so because three, technically, you scored 100, but given the your mindset, probably you were tired, you were sleepy, and probably you were hungry and all that. Based on that, you couldn't make it to 100. But in fact, psychologically, you made it to 100. And don't think about the three missing points, because you made 97. Okay, now I get it. Okay, great. You know what, Bhante? Yes, I got over 95 every subject. See then? Okay, hereafter I wouldn't worry. Because there was one peer pressure too, actually, due to peer pressure too. And peer pressure, that's the word that we use in our life, but actually that is called the pressure from our samsara, from our surroundings. So now the boy is happy now. He's happy. And then this morning also he came to, hey Bhante, you know why? I slept very well last night. Yeah, then I said that I was so happy to help you. I went to bed around 2 o'clock, but I also slept very well. But it wasn't too late for you, no. Why? I made you happy. So I woke up at, usually I wake up at 4 a.m. No matter, so usually I sleep 2 hours. This morning I woke up at 6:59, meaning 7 o'clock. I was so happy. So, and then, okay, then do you think that I made you happy too? Yes. Yes. I made you happy, you made me happy. So that is when, so then 97 things. So he lacked virya. So most of the time people underestimate their ability. When talked about, people don't trust themselves. I should say self-confidence. That's where the virya fits in, sense of self-confidence. People have talents. Elsewhere about the talk about the four types of personalities about the talks about. Those who are good and capable, but don't know that they are good and capable. Those who are not capable, but think that they are but they are not good and capable. Those who are capable and know that they are good and capable. And those who are not capable and not good and know that they are not good and not capable. And Buddha highly appreciated the fourth one too. Because when you accept that you have weak points and you can improve. And so the luckiest at the same time, unluckiest type is those who are good and talented and capable, but don't know that how good and how capable they are. Because they lack virya. They need more motivation. So any other questions? Yes, Sarita. Vidya, Piti, and some. For what? Oh, yeah, great, yeah. Mm. Yeah, sure, yeah. This is one. Now, when it comes to, how to say, nekamma, letting go, renunciation. right? Renunciation. So let go of, how to say, let go of something that you had. Probably Nekkhamma and Dana are connected all the time. Now Dana is letting, then you give. At the same time, you are not supposed to hold it back. When you don't hold it back, what you have given, and that completes Nekkhamma as well. And then again, you do that this morning, toward the evening, and you are having second thoughts as to why you gave it away. And that is when you are going to fall now, because you are having second, that is, no, I should not think like that. And you energize, so that is virya. Okay. That is virya. So that's why if you are, actually people can practice all the 10, a little bit of every parameter within one good action. What people need is sati. Sati for virya. And virya is the first thing for that. And virya, you can also apply virya for in the future, maybe next week or so, we will just refer to the paramita number 9, metta, loving kindness, that we always practice. So let's say you do metta to yourself and your loved ones. You come to the stage on which you practice, radiate metta to your opponents. May my opponents be well, happy and peaceful. May they take care of themselves. How can they take care of themselves happily? Now they are the ones who tortured me. They put me, I fell victim to them. They robbed me of my belongings. They ruined my life and all that. But then at that point, you lose your virya. And then again, you take a deep breath and say, let it go. Let it go. When you say let it go, and you practice a bit of Nekkhamma then again. And then what happens is, in order to do that, when you say let it go, I shouldn't take my metta back. Now, it is a different story. There's no point. I have been complaining against my opponent for a long time. But still, but my opponent, they must be enjoying their life somewhere. Why should I suffer anymore? I am the victim, but I continue to suffer. So that, okay, may they be well, happy, wherever they are, whatever they are doing right now. That's virya then. So virya, you need instantaneously. It is one of the most, that's why it's one of the most difficult paramita. It is one of the most subtle innate abilities. Nekkhamma. The virya. And Buddha, say, Siddhartha, ascetic Siddhartha, had the highest level of virya for a period of 6 years, but later he understood that he had used his virya for the wrong cause. That's when he gave up on dukkaracharya, or the self-mortification. But again, was he worried? If it happened to Upananda, I would have cursed myself. Oh, why should I? I was stupid me. Why did I lose 6 good years of my life? If I were him, then I should have probably given up on my relatively speaking. Now, Buddha, this is the most to me. Buddha's 6 years of self-mortification and then his choosing the middle path always motivates me for virya. He was never worried about the 6 years that he lost to the wrong spirituality. Instead, what happens was so he was so eager to continue, and that's when, and he learned a lot from that too, because from right from the day one of his life, he had enjoyed luxury, comfort. So there was no need for him to practice self-indulgence, the other religious belief. And he had never practiced self-mortification. So the 6 years of self-mortification to him, it was like a fast track, lifetime experience on fast track, by fast track. 6 years, he went through all the sufferings. That's when he was happy. And there were no second thoughts in his life. He never wanted to practice self-indulgence, and now he would never ever need, go back to self-mortification. He had done with both. Now his mind was clear. That is when he was so happy. Now it's the time for me to continue. That was the best motivation for him. Actually, he was more motivated to, he got more motivated by his selection, his choice of middle path, than he left his royal life. That is called the Great Renunciation. Now he could very easily let go of it, and he practiced Nekkhama again. Nekkhama, he let go of his attachment to the 6 good years. Then if I were him, then I would still worry about my attachment to the 6 years. I lost something. See the way he encouraged, motivated himself. That is virya then. So virya is instantaneous. Sometimes you use your virya, but it always goes unnoticed. Right? When somebody is offending you, and you take a deep breath and say, you smile. What is that? You use your virya to the maximum extent that moment. That's why you didn't retaliate, instead you smiled. That's virya. It's something very, but it's very tricky. Very tricky, because sometimes virya can come masquerading as what is called wisdom. Ego can masquerade. Ego can in the garb of virya. For example, let's say, for example, like this, when somebody has made some bad remarks about you, and at that point, so we would say that I wouldn't help him anymore. I wouldn't listen to him anymore. And then you think that you made up your mind. You made up your mind to not to help him anymore, which is your right. You are right. You have a right not to help. But at the same time, ethically, it harms your paramitas. Because you lose your, because you there, you arouse, you rekindle your sense of resistance. It happened to me a lot. Sometimes I almost I miss a video a lot. That is when hours after I remember that I should have used my virya to regain my, how to say, my composure, maintain my status. It happens to anyone. It's natural. Because that's why it's very hard. That's why virya is one of the hardest paramitas. Never to worry. If Siddhartha could lose 6 good years for the wrong cause, but still using the maximum level of his virya, why should we worry? There shouldn't be any reason for us to worry about our failures. It's always there's a chance. The thing is, virya helps you. Virya overrides fate, as I said. It virya helps to override your belief in your self surrender to karma, horoscopes, or stars and planets, and fate. Bodhisattvas never talk about karma. Otherwise, karma can very easily discourage them. If all bodhisattvas thought about karma, there have been no Buddha in the world. That's how virya is a feeder paramita. It feeds all every other paramitas. We have 5 more minutes. Should we continue, or we can? Any last questions? If not. And the next one is Kanti. We can. Oh, it's Sarita, yes.
If we have no virya,
and
we want to do loving kindness.
Yeah. Good point. In fact, loving kindness, that's excellent. See, that's why always your questions put me on a better direction. Now you are in denial, like you have almost given up everything. So that's all of a sudden you decide to, it's my life, why should I hate myself? Because finally, still life goes and I have to live this life. And that means in that, so there's no point putting the blame on others. Finally, their baby help will never come to me. But this is the moment in my life that I have to survive all by myself, just no other help. So that I should do it myself. The moment you think that I must do it all by myself, and that is, and you are now getting a little bit of self-confidence, then you do that. Why should I hate myself? By hating myself, I do more damage to myself. Then say, why not take care of myself? But there's no one else to help me. And that is when you do metta to yourself. So that is always advisable to, is always prudent to practice self-metta as long as you like. Don't rush to do metta to others. Do it yourself until you have become stronger emotionally. It's a good point, excellent point. Okay.
In sort of Western culture, shall we say, the concept of grit and determination is also associated with pain, in the sense that there's an expression, no gain without pain. So it's like a sacrifice.
Right.
You can do something sometimes.
That's right.
An outstanding effort.
Yeah.
It might cost you
some sort of. Exactly. In that sense, in that Western, it is the same video. It's the same video. The Western people are right. No pain, no gain. Like no sacrifice, no achievement. So that is no video, no enlightenment. And it is the same thing you put in on different levels. In fact, it's one of my mottos. Since I moved to America, then I printed on a piece of paper and I stick on my fridge. Every time I went to the kitchen early morning, I would say no pain, no gain, because I had a lot of coursework and studies and classes and drive myself. I'd earn the driver's license and help people, and at the same time cook food and feed the homeless and help new immigrants, pay my bills and all that. Always I told myself no pain, no gain. In fact, excellent point. Yeah, I love that. So that's the way to put another way, this video. No vidya, meaning no sacrifice, no pain. So everything is vidya. See, in the Vesantra Jataka, in which in one of the birth stories of the Buddha, this is Bodhisattva, he sacrificed his he donated his wife and two children to that Brahmin Jujaka who came, and so later on it was found that the god Chakra wanted to test him. It was not an actual human person who came to him. He tested him. And that's why they are saying in the Vesantra Jataka and a lot of other texts, sometimes now even divine beings get motivated by your virya. And in the Majjhima Nikaya, I don't remember the exact sutra where Buddha says, people who are virtuous and hard-working, they are the ones who they are the ones who get worshipped by divine beings. So God Chakra story. Those who are virtuous, silavanta, and hardworking. Those who work harder. And they deserve the homage, respect from the divinity. That's one of my favorite teachings of motivation from the canon. Even divine forces get encouraged by your virya. Yeah, it's true. Let alone human beings. It's true. That's according to Majjhima Nikaya. Sanyutta Nikaya. Sanyutta Nikaya, Sakka Sanyutta. That is when one god Chakra was traveling somewhere with his charioteer, with his assistant Matali. And then all of a sudden, the god Chakra turned, bowed down to where the direction where the human world was, the earth was. And then Matali asked Chakra, why did you do that? To whom you pay bow down? Because you are the king of heaven. No, I paid my respect to the human beings. Why? Because those who There are human beings who are virtuous and hardworking. They are endowed qualities. They work hard, and so and they deserve my respect. So that is when even the divinity, even divine beings would respect us, respect humanity because of our virya. And elsewhere in I think that's also in the Sanghita Nikaya or in the Kuddaka Nikaya. I don't exactly remember which sutra. And Buddha said, "Seda vakitte baha balaparice dhammike dhammaladde." Meaning, those who are hardworking and sweat, how to shed their sweat and make a living, and by using the money that they make, they offer something. And there are other rich people who cheat on others, who make money so by unethical means. Now, when those rich people who have make their living by unethical means, and when they practice dana, and so there, the value of their dana is much less than how to say an iota of the value or the dana practiced by those poor people, hard workers. So that's the Buddha's teaching. Now there should be an you must make your living by ethical means, not by unethical means. Some people run rich people, they make money. That's called blood money. You know, some corporations, and they donate money for charity. But in the eyes of the Buddha, there will be some people benefiting from that, but ethically, the action is not acceptable.
That's right livelihood.
That's right, exactly, right livelihood. So the virya is everywhere then. For everything, we need virya. That's why it's one of the most subtle paramitas. In fact, most people, if we are mindful enough, we can be practicing virya all the time. All the time. For example, let's say when you are stepping down the stage, sometimes you almost stumble, and then you, so that you balance yourself. And I have known one of my friends in America. When it happens to him, he curses himself. Then I said, then he said he is a good Buddhist. I said, no, you are not a good Buddhist. How? Because why did you curse yourself? Because that is, you were not mindful enough. And also he has some problem with his leg. I just said, the next time I would be more mindful, and I will walk slowly, be mindful, and that is virya. So he became a talk of the town, I mean, in his community. He's very famous. Whenever he goes for a function, people would love to see him stumbling, falling. Then I told him, see, people make fun of you because you scan and tell the people that there's something wrong, this is sloppy, and I don't like this stage and all that. So, and he would always put the blame on something, which is not good. And people find his behavior silly, funny. So, and some youngsters, his own grandchild called, my grandpa is insane. I said, don't say that to his face. Once I said, what did happen? I think he almost passed out. I don't know. Don't be rude to him. Don't be rude to him. Help him. Because he has a problem with his leg. And that is when, then why? Then you are his Kalyana Mitta. Your trustworthy friend. Your grandpa needs your help. And so you are his grandson. Because in practicing, and another talk the next week, the following week. Then we talk about in practicing paramitas, we need the assistance from our Kalyana Mittas. There should be something to share our feelings, share our stories. But that Kalyana Mitta has to be a good one. Because sometimes some people come to your life to spy on you. I mean, just to, how to say, just to know things from you. Some people take advantage, yeah. That's bad. That's not good. Yeah. That being said, thank you for coming to the class today. See you the next week again.